Thank you, Jonga and Blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, March 18th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gandhi.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The University of Zimbabwe reopened following yesterday's students' riot and strike action by lecturers and other employees over their February salaries and last year's outstanding bonus payment.
Actually, today I was at the school during the morning. There was no one at the school. The school, it was a quiet place, and the students, they are still feeling that if we go there, the police will be there. Oh, no one is at the school at this time.
The MDC renewal team says it will file a challenge with the Constitutional Court tomorrow against the expulsion of its legislators from Parliament.
We are taking this matter to the Constitutional Court. Our lawyers are busy drafting the affidavits. Once they finish them, they will be filed tomorrow. We are challenging the decision by the Speaker. There is no right to recall.
And activist Itai Dzamara is still missing 9 days after being abducted by alleged state operatives in Glenview high-density suburb in Harare.
The University of Zimbabwe reopened today, just a day after Vice Chancellor Levi Nyagura ordered the institution to close shop until March 24th, following student riots and a strike by workers, including lecturers. Professor Nyagura issued a statement today following yesterday's disturbances, saying, quote, "The urgent matters that the university wanted to sort out had been resolved." This was in apparent reference to the striking workers' February salaries. The lecturers were also demanding the payment of their December bonuses. Some lecturers confirmed to Studio 7 that they have now received their salaries. The university yesterday forced students out of halls of residence after closing down the institution, a move criticized by the Zimbabwe National Students Union as heartless. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke with University of Zimbabwe second-year student Harrison Saruchera, who explains that the situation was calm at the university today without much activity.
The message is moving around with the WhatsApp channels that the school has opened today, but it is not actually opened because the lecturers are still complaining that they are still not paid, and if they are still not paid, they are not coming for work, especially from NAS and if some of the lecturers that use it. They're just saying we have opened the school, but the students, they've been beaten to go home yesterday, and they were harassed by the police, so they cannot come today.
What about yourself? Have you officially returned back to the residence halls?
Actually, today I was at the school during the morning. There was no one at the school. The school, it was a quiet place, and the students, they are still fearing that if we go there, the police will beat us. So no one is at the school at this time.
There are some students who are saying that UZ should reimburse them for some of the funds that they had to spend yesterday, particularly finding a way home.
That must be a must that they should refund our money. Because we have used our money for the buses and what. So they should give us that money. That is if they have the money. But if they do not have that money, where do they get this money? They are saying we are going to pay the lecturers tomorrow.
And moving forward, what do you think will happen next? As you yourself are saying, you're unsure, even though the school is now open, things are looking very questionable.
We don't know what is going to happen, but I think we are looking forward to that if they pay our lecturers and the workers, then we are going to the school. If the workers are still not paid, especially the cooks, which means the problem will still be there. It will be still unsolved.
University of Zimbabwe second-year student Harrison Saruchera speaking on the line from Harare.
The MDC renewal team says it will file a challenge with the Constitutional Court tomorrow against the expulsion of its legislators from Parliament. House Speaker Jacob Mdenda granted a request by the MDCT yesterday to recall all 21 lawmakers who had broken ranks with the party. Renewal spokesman Jacob Mafume tells reporter Ntungamili Nkomo they are confident of victory.
We are challenging the decision by the Speaker. There is no right to recall in our constitution. there is a right for floor crossing. Section 129 refers to floor crossing. No one has crossed the floor. We have had a dispute with our colleagues who have teamed up with ZANU-PF and promised Jonathan Moyo the Cholocho seat and among other seats, and they have put an underhand deal to donate these seats to ZANU-PF. We are going to challenge that in court because there was no reason for the speaker to change the rulings he has given before, which were in tandem with the law and the constitution. This decision by the speaker is dead at law and in fact. What is surprising is the willingness of our colleagues to work with ZANU-PF at this stage. We want to highlight to the people that this is a beginning and not the end.
Some say your odds are just too long in this case. What do you make of that?
Well, our odds are very good. We are of the view that this case is winnable. This case in terms of the law is as clear as a light at night.
MDC Renewal Team spokesman Jacob Mafume on the line from Harare. One of the expelled lawmakers, Albert Mhlanga, tells Ntungameli Nkomo, while he is disappointed, his resolve to continue pressing for democracy could not be stronger.
I am a very disappointed person to a level where Tsvangirai can donate some extra seats to ZANU-PF. You know that we had actually a minimum of 91. And it reduces that by 21. In fact, Tsvangirai might know that it doesn't reduce by 21. He's, according to me, is only left with only 20 MPs. Therefore, it's so surprising a person who is saying, I'm fighting for democracy, I'm in the big tent. That tent is touring on part pieces just to reward Mugabe. And I can see why Tsvangirai is rewarding Mugabe. Mugabe actually is letting him stay in a government house when he knows very well he's no longer working for the government. So they were rewarding each other. So we don't work on rewards. We'll actually fight very hard to work on our constituents. It doesn't mean working with the people you must be in parliament. You can work harder when you are outside. We are definitely assuring both Tsvangirai and Mugabe that in future we are going to form a proper opposition, because Zimbabwe, there is a gap. There is no opposition. We wasted our time 20 years thinking that Tsvangirai is an opposition, is a compliment of Mugabe.
If you had any projects that were benefiting your constituents, how is that going to be impacted now that you are out of parliament?
Yes, we have met and agreed that we will speed up all programs, this time with a higher and a higher percentage of helping the people of Zimbabwe. Because the people of Zimbabwe are unfortunate. Staying there, their homes, they think there is somebody opposing Mugabe. If they think there is somebody opposing Mugabe, they are wasting their time. Mugabe has got no opposition. He's got compliments, he's got uncles and cousins working with him.
Expelled MDC Renewal Team legislator Albert Mhlanga on the line with Ntungameli Nkomo from Harare.
Civic organizations and colleagues of activist and freelance journalist Itai Dzamara, who was abducted last week by alleged state agents, today distributed placards bearing his face to raise public awareness about his disappearance. The family and colleagues of Dzamara, a leader of a movement called Occupy Africa Unity Square, which criticizes President Mugabe's alleged mismanagement of the economy and want him to leave office, say his whereabouts are still unknown. Dzamara's fellow activist Charles Nyoni tells reporter Standekile Mhlanga that civic groups and political parties will march tomorrow in Harare to demand more from the state in efforts to either locate or release the activist.
After the court had ordered that we should go and have a look at the cells, so we've been waiting with the lawyers for them to escort us. As of today, we have been having placards designed, placards with Itai's face. And by tomorrow, we'll be a march in town along the usual route that we always take. Usually, we occupy Africa in its way by going into the park and sitting there and making everyone who comes there aware of why we are occupying, educating the people and answering all their questions to let them know why the state is beefed up security, why there is a lot of riot police in the park.
act, and how is the response like from people?
When Itai disappeared, people realized that we were not doing this for the money. And now we are having a lot of sympathy and a lot of people giving us encouragement, as well as individuals who are well-wishing, even trying by all means to even bring us food in the park.
And that was Charles Nyoni, a member of the Occupy Africa Unity Square movement, on the line from Harare.
The Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights has filed an urgent application seeking to intervene in proceedings before the Constitutional Court instituted by Prosecutor General Johannes Tomana on his constitutional independence. The Prosecutor General last week filed an application before the Constitutional Court in which he wants the Constitutional Court to declare that when he refuses to issue a certificate for private prosecution, the matter is within prosecutorial discretion and therefore not subject to review by any court of law. The Prosecutor General is also seeking to bar the courts from interfering with his powers to decline prosecution. The Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights says Mr. Tomana's application has a major impact on the protection of human rights and freedoms guaranteed in the Constitution. We earlier spoke with the lawyer Zimbabwe Chimbwa.
Yeah, that is correct. We understand that the Prosecutor General has filed an application to stop the court from interfering with what he's calling the prosecutorial independence in either agreeing or declining to prosecute. And from our point of view as lawyers for human rights, we think that he is overstepping his powers because he is interfering with the concept of separation of powers, and the courts must have that ability to review decisions made by other actors, him included. So we have filed an application to be joined to those proceedings, and we will be opposing that application that is filed in defense of the rule of law.
When is the case expected to be heard in the courts?
The Chief Justice will probably see the papers possibly this week, and then if there is merit in our application, we'll then be asked to file heads of arguments once we are joined to these proceedings. So we do not have an exact time to say, but we believe in the next 2 weeks or so the matter must be said out.
That was Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights lawyer Zimbabwe Chimbwa in Harare.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
diaspora groups help pay fees for struggling school children in Zimbabwe.
But first, we take a look at regional and international news.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says he intends to form a government in the next 2 to 3 weeks, which would give him a fourth term as Prime Minister. He commented after his conservative Likud party scored a resounding victory in Israel's parliamentary election.
The Nigerian army says it has found no clues to the whereabouts of more than 200 schoolgirls kidnapped last year by Boko Haram, despite the retaking of many towns from the militant group. Chief of Army Staff General Kenneth Minema told reporters the army is making inquiries about the girls in all liberated areas, but he said those questioned have not made any comments suggesting the Chibok girls were there and taken away.
And Sierra Leone's president has fired his vice president Samuel Sam Sumana, who was recently kicked out of the ruling party on allegations he was instigating violence and forming a new party. President Ernest Bai Koroma made the announcement today, saying Sam Sumana had shown a willingness to abandon his duties and office. The vice president sought asylum at the U.S. Embassy in Freetown Saturday, but later returned home.
You are listening to Studio 7, coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington, D.C.
Some Zimbabweans living outside the country are engaged in various projects back home, catering for the needs of the poor. One such organization is Royal Destiny Gospel Choir, based in Britain, which has set up a scholarship fund for students failing to pay fees in Zimbabwe. According to a recent government report, 13,000 children dropped out of school in 2013, mostly due to lack of school fees. The report, titled Education Management System in Zimbabwe, shows that the government is also failing to run its program for poor students known as the Basic Education Assistance Program, or BEAM, because of lack of funds. In trying to alleviate the suffering of such students, leader of Royal Destiny Gospel Choir, Maria Adonis Rusike, tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube they have teamed up with an organization back home to help a few needy children.
We are working with an organization called Makokova Healthcare Initiative. We linked up with them because they are on the ground. As you know, it's not easy if you're in this country to manage something that is in Zimbabwe. So we sort of like feed onto them because they are on the ground. They can look at the need. We provide them with the resources. At the moment, we have provided scholarships to a few orphans, and we are looking to do more projects with them.
How many people are we talking about here that you are actually helping?
We've only just started. At the moment, we've got 3 girls in our books that we are offering scholarships to.
So what type of scholarships?
Paying their fees and uniforms. That's currently what we are doing.
Now, what drove you to start this kind of project?
It's being able to give back, and as well as looking at the desperate situation that people are in Zimbabwe. And we're looking at children who are very much in need as well, but they have capability to actually change their lives around, really, and give them something, give them hope to improve their situation. Otherwise, the hope will hardly be there.
So when did you start doing this project?
Officially, working with other organizations, we started last year, but it's something that as individuals we've always done.
And why Makokova Healthcare Center?
Because it's the only organization that we happen to be in contact with.
How feasible is it to work with such organizations, and you are based in UK?
It's feasible in the sense that as long as there is clarity from the beginning how you intend to work together, and you share the same vision and goal to alleviate our people from difficulties, from poverty, you know, it becomes that just that sharing of that vision, it makes things easier.
How difficult is it to raise funds in UK to actually cater for the needs of the poor?
For us, because we are a gospel group that is growing, we raise funds when we've got concerts. We are also working with another charity here in the UK, which is called Ahava Love Ministries. What we do is they are a registered charity, so they are working all over the world. They've got the capacity to raise funds, so and we haven't. So what we do is we work through them. We raise funds through them. If we've got concerts, we will have raffles. We will have the boxes where they put money, and sometimes we do fundraising concerts to raise some money.
What do you hope to achieve through this program?
To be able to make a difference, to be able to make a difference in people's lives, to give them hope. At the moment, we are trying to raise money for another girl who passed very well, and she needs to do A-levels. She hasn't got any source of income in the family. The father is in jail. The mother is blind. And that girl is perfect. She's very good, academically very good, and she did very well in O-levels. So we are trying to raise money for her to go on to A-levels and hopefully university, and hopefully, you know, she can bring upon hope in the whole family.
Do you hope to actually expand?
We hope so. At the moment, we mainly concentrate in music, and hopefully as we grow, we can have a department that is mainly charities department within the whole organization. But at the moment, because we haven't got the resources and the manpower to manage another department, we are working through other charities.
That was Royal Destiny Gospel Choir leader Maria Adonis Rusike speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from London.
It's 7 months now since Shortwave Radio Africa ended its broadcast to Zimbabwe from London due to withdrawal of funding by Western donors. Its founder, longtime broadcaster Jerry Jackson from Zimbabwe, but currently based in the United Kingdom, says she's disappointed that the broadcast came to an end, coincidentally, as the West was starting to re-engage with Zimbabwe, a move she describes as a mistake. In an interview with Studio 7's Ndimiake Mwakalielie, Jackson says she's now reassessing her options.
Oh, it was sadder than you can imagine, because it had been about a 16-year project to try and help Zimbabwe have access to truly independent media and some real freedom of expression. It was frankly remarkable that we managed to keep going for 13 years and find the funds to keep going for that length of time. But after the elections in 2013, when there was clearly no change even on the horizon in Zimbabwe, and of course the West decided to, what they call, re-engage with Mugabe and ZANU-PF, I think the donors' priorities to fund us kind of disappeared.
How did you reconcile with that kind of, you know, reality?
It was, of course, disappointing, because I think the radio station had an important role to play and would have continued to have an important role to play. But I'm a realist and I understand how donor funding works. And when something drags on for a long time, they, as you say, kind of lose interest. It goes off the radar. I do think re-engagement is a mistake, because I don't think ZANU-PF has changed at all. And I don't think re-engagement is a successful policy. But with no change on the horizon, I imagine the diplomats thought they should try something else. I don't know. I'm not a diplomat.
So when I think about your broadcasting career, and you had a long one dating all the way back to Zimbabwe, and the closure of shortwave radio broadcasting, what comes to mind? I've coined this phrase, a voice silenced. Do you feel silenced now?
I guess I do, because it's been a bit of a personal mission for so long. You know, I used to work for the state broadcaster and I was fired in 1997 for my broadcast. So I have tried, and it is disappointing to be silenced, but these things happen and you just have to pick up the pieces and think again.
Are you doing anything at all in terms of broadcasting?
No, no broadcasting at all. And of course, I miss that deeply. I love radio. I think it's one of the most important mediums. I'm pretty active on social media, but at the moment, no, I have no official active role in anything to do with Zimbabwe.
So what's next for Jerry Jackson?
Gosh, I don't know. It's been a long and grueling 16 years, and it's taken some time to sort of recover from that stress. I'm looking around, hoping to find another cause or some way to get involved with Zimbabwe again. So who knows? I'll keep on trying.
Broadcaster Jerry Jackson is the founder of Shortwave Radio, which closed last year. She spoke with Studio 7's Ndimiake Mwakalielie.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts will discuss with experts and you, the listeners, about the expulsion of MDC renewal MPs from Parliament.
To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios. Coming up, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United Nations Human Rights Council, or UNHCR, carries out a difficult task. It is responsible for promoting and protecting human rights around the world. In other words, it speaks on behalf of those who have been silenced by their own governments. The United States supports the UNHCR for one simple reason, said Secretary of State John Kerry. We believe in its mission and its possibilities.
We know that at best this council can be a valuable means for reminding every nation of its commitments and obligations and holding countries accountable when they fail to meet international standards.
Civil society is the UNHCR's best ally, said Secretary Kerry. So it is especially troubling that people such as activists, journalists, community organizers, critical thinkers, all of whom reject extreme ideologies while showing people a way to express hopes and grievances peacefully, so many people in so many places are facing grotesque restrictions on their freedoms and rights from their own governments, including, in some cases, their right to life. In Syria, civilians are caught between horrific attacks from violent extremists like ISIL and a brutal dictator who gasses his own people, starves them as a weapon of war, and barrages them with barrel bombs, among other crimes and atrocities. Tens of thousands of North Koreans live in inhuman conditions, controlled through starvation, torture, incarceration, or execution. And in separatist-controlled areas of eastern Ukraine, men, women, and children are being killed. They're being tortured, they're being raped and sexually assaulted, detained arbitrarily, abducted for ransom, forced into labor, said Secretary Kerry. Together, we have to be the voice for those who are silenced by their leaders. We have to be a ray of light for those who spend their days locked away without cause, many times in anonymity, in dark and dank cells somewhere in the world. We have to be the source of hope for those who fear that their suffering may never end or never even be recognized. This is the kind of organization, this council, that the world desperately needs.
And that was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Studio 7 is now available on Channel Sim on your WizTech free-to-air decoder from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Monday to Friday and from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday. From your WizTech decoder, look for CHZim. Channel Zim is available 24/7 on your satellite TV, smartphone, and online. To listen online, go to www.channelzim.net. A son of Zimbabwe's first post-independence president, Kenan Sodindo Banana, who was convicted and jailed for 10 years for sodomy, tells Studio 7 in an exclusive interview life was hard at State House, which he believes was literally an executive prison. 48-year-old Nathan Sipo Banana says it took at least 2 weeks for him and his siblings to be cleared by security to visit friends and engage in various social activities. Apart from that, he says life was tough after staying at the presidential mansion when they left with a heavy burden of their father's conviction of performing what the courts said were unnatural acts on men.
I would describe it as an executive prison. It was quite exciting at first when we first went there. It wasn't as luxurious as people might think it is, because if you had to go out, you needed to get kind of notice, like 2 weeks notice if you wanted to go and visit a friend. If you want to go to a movie, you need to give notice before time, maybe a week or so before time, so that they can make arrangements for you to go out. So as a young person, you know, that's quite frustrating, because sometimes you just want to walk out and go and play with your friends.
Don't miss this first edition of a three-part interview tomorrow on Studio 7 with Nathan Sipo Banana, whose father served 8 months of a 10-year sentence in one of Zimbabwe's prisons. Stay tuned.
And now to recap today's top stories.
The University of Zimbabwe reopens following yesterday's students' riot and strike action by lecturers and other employees over their February salaries and last year's outstanding bonus payment.
The MDC renewal team says it will file a challenge with the Constitutional Court tomorrow against the expulsion of its legislators from Parliament.
And activist Itai Dzamara is still missing 9 days after being abducted by alleged state operatives in Glenview high-density suburb in Harare.
Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Standekile Mhlanga and Ntungameli Nkomo. This is Chris Gande in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.